Good morning and welcome to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field. I'm your host for the show, and this is a program for creative people. Today I have a really different kind of program for you. You know, the show is called Manzanita Voices, and voices come in many forms. Usually, I talk with writers about their process. I interview authors about their books. But creativity and art have many other ways of speaking to us. There are lots of ways to express ideas and feelings and emotions and beauty. And one of the oldest forms of that for humanity is music. Today, we are going to be blessed with music. My guests are Daniel Roost and Francesca Anderson, and I was lucky enough to come upon them playing in a gallery in McCallumy Hill a few Sundays ago. And Daniel plays classical guitar, and Francesca plays the flute and other instruments as well. Before we meet them, though, I do have a morning workout poem that I want to read for you. I tried to find something that one of our friends has written that has a musical theme. This one is by Dan Williams. It's called Italian Opera and Angel's Camp. Both of them acquired tastes. Take, for instance, Puccini's O Caro Mio Bambino. Hear it on KVFC while driving between the false front gold rush buildings facing one another along Highway 49. Let's say that Kiri Tikanoue is singing in her lovely coloratura soprano. You have had minestrone in a tiny cafe with life-size cows painted on every interior wall. You've seen rural mailboxes on the way in where cowboys live with Italian names. The Catholic cemetery fragrant with Mediterranean cypress, iced with marble seraphim. Just about the moment Tikanoue takes that breathtaking glide all the way up to A-flat, that sublime, silent glissando that tears your heart with its beauty, you pass a statue of a giant green frog that now seems almost godlike. Now there is a combination of fabulous music and Angel's Camp. I love the combination. It's wonderful. So thank you, Dan Williams, for that poem. I read that from Manzanita Wild Edges, Prose and Poetry of the Motherlode and Sierra. It's our volume 6. Came out in 2010. Now it's time to meet my guests. Daniel Roost, hello, welcome.
Good morning, Linda.
And Francesca Anderson.
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us. I was so pleased by your music. Why don't we have you play something for us right now, just to get everybody in the mood for your wonderful, wonderful creativity.
Be happy to. We have a couple of pieces we opened with at the gallery, the Musette, the Notebook of Anna Magdalena Bach. Hope you enjoy it.
We will.
Thank you.
was wonderful. How lucky am I to have my own private concert here? What was the name of that piece, Daniel?
That was the Musette and the March by Johann Sebastian Bach.
Now, Francesca, you teach flute.
Yes, I do.
Play. And how did, is it your major instrument or do you play other instruments?
Flute is my major instrument.
Really? And when did you get started?
I got started at the age of 9. I started in my school music program, as many kids do. I had wanted to play the piano. My mother had a friend that was always pointing out my long fingers and telling me I should be a pianist.
Well, they're good for flute, too.
That was my idea, and I thought I would play the piano when we started school music. And I was very disappointed when my mother told me that they didn't rent pianos at school.
Oh, well, it does make it difficult, and this flute is easier to carry back and forth.
Well, that's how I wound up with flute. When I finally accepted I couldn't take piano, I asked my mother, well, if I can't take piano, what am I going to take? And she said, why don't you take something easy to carry back and forth to school?
So there it was. So do you play any piano now at all?
I play a little bit of piano, not enough. I can teach very beginning students, and that's about it. I do still love the instrument, though.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, you play beautifully. Now, have you ever played in an orchestra or anything like that?
Played in many orchestras, mostly in the Bay Area, because I went to college in the Bay Area, so my career was there for many years.
Who did you play with?
Played with the Monterey Symphony, the Santa Cruz Symphony, the Monterey Bay Symphony. I did some work with San Jose Opera. Even played a couple of shows with, at that time it was called the Civic Light Opera. I think now it's the American Musical Theater.
Uh-huh.
So I played in pit orchestras and did some shows.
What's your favorite?
Oh, I had a lot of fun doing a little night music, actually.
Oh.
It was a good one. I also played in Oliver, which was fun.
I've always wondered, seeing a conductor in front of an orchestra, it seems that the musicians know their pieces so well. Is that conductor really necessary? I'm sure he must be, because
it always looks like they're doing nothing, doesn't it?
Yeah. But they set the tone for the playing, right?
The conductor is very necessary, actually, and I don't think I appreciated it enough myself until I conducted for a time. I used to conduct a flute choir that was part of a youth symphony organization, the South Bay Youth Orchestra down in Saratoga, and I had to actually take some private conducting lessons and learn about conducting in order to direct that group, because I had not done much. Even in college as a music major, I had not conducted much. So I gained a lot of respect for what conductors do. And, of course, their biggest task is setting the tempos or the speed of the piece. And when there are changes in speed within the piece, the musicians are really supposed to follow the conductor with tempo changes and entrances and cutoffs at the end of the piece. Those are things that when there's a large group, we really just cannot stay together in those places. So the conductor keeps us together.
Yeah.
But you are right. He also directs the mood of the piece, and that is done with the type of beat. You know, very large, big, bold beats indicate that we should be playing loud and strong, and more subtle conducting is a softer, calmer mood.
Mm. Have you ever played for a female conductor?
I have.
What was her name or their name?
Oh, gosh. Now you're
okay. Didn't mean to
now you're drawing a memory. But in college,
very
actually,
many?
My band and orchestra conductor's name was Joyce Johnson.
Huh.
And she still directs in the Bay Area. I believe she directs the Redwood Symphony in the Bay Area. And then I played for a female conductor who was directing the Santa Cruz Symphony for a couple of years. And her name escapes me, but she was fab.
Yes. What was her name?
Marin Alsop. Yeah,
okay.
She was wonderful. Who else? Those are the only two coming to mind right now.
That's fabulous. Yeah, it would be nice to see more female conductors out there.
Absolutely.
And I think we will more and more.
Yes.
There's Joanne Folletta.
Who?
Joanne Folletta.
Yeah.
Joanne Folletta actually conducted the Santa Cruz Symphony. That's who I worked with. But I also worked with Marin Alsop.
Oh. Now, Daniel, did you play down in the Santa Cruz area? You seem to know all these people.
Well, actually, my mother lived in Santa Cruz, but
I
grew up in San Jose and more familiar with Santa Clara County. But But yeah, I began playing when I was 6 years old. I've never stopped, and I'm over the hill now, so I'm a lifelong guitarist.
What motivated you when you were very young to want to play the guitar?
Pop music, to be honest. The Ventures, surf music.
The Ventures.
And then, of course,
yeah.
The Beatles. The Beach Boys.
Yeah.
He knew that all boys with guitars got the girls.
And that was part of it.
Probably.
It was extremely cool.
Yeah, very, very cool.
My next door neighbor, the eldest child, was a girl who had a boyfriend. And her boyfriend played in a Ventures cover band. They did Wipeout and Walk Don't Run and
Oh, he played. He played in Wipeout and
he played the music of the Ventures.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
band did.
Oh, he played that
and
music.
And it was just thrilling, absolutely thrilling.
Oh gosh, well it is thrilling. I mean, just sitting here with you two here in this room, and being the only one here, and being surrounded by your music is it's so exciting. It's wonderful. We're going to have to break right now. This first segment has gone really fast, but we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. I'm here today with Francesca Anderson and Daniel Roos. And we are having a musical morning today. Now, Francesca, you play the flute beautifully.
Thank you.
And we were talking in between the break about how music is such an ancient part of man's history. And you were telling me about an old flute that was found, I believe, in Germany. And I found a poem in Wild Edges, one of our Manzanita anthologies. It's called Bone Flute, and it's by Patricia Wellingham Jones. And I'd like to read that poem, and then you can tell us what you know about this ancient flute that was found. Bone Flute. A flute lies tucked among decaying oak leaves in the lee of a rotten log. Carved from bone, weather-stained brown around each breath hole, you cradle it in warm hands, wipe the debris on your jeans, lift the flute to soft lips, fill the woodland with living sound. I was telling you, I had an experience like that one time where I was out in the woods and I heard someone playing a flute and how beautiful it was. And you said that there was a time when you actually did that.
Yes, I did.
There's nothing more wonderful than being in nature and hearing music like this. Now, what about that ancient flute that you said was found?
It was a very important scientific discovery, and the article, I believe, came out in National Geographic in 2009 or 2010. Mm. They found a very, very old bone flute in a cave in Germany, and the flute was in pieces, and they were able to, you know, find all of the pieces and put it back together. It was made of vulture bones. And they did carbon testing on the bones and found the flute to be about 35,000 years old.
That is incredible.
So it was a very major discovery because we did not know that human civilizations of that time period were sophisticated enough to have musical instruments. And so currently the flute is the oldest instrument that we know of, although we're pretty sure that drums were also being made at that time,
mm-hmm.
and flutes and drums were commonly used in religious or ceremonial rituals in these very, very ancient cultures.
Wow, that is amazing. And it just shows that mankind has this innate need to express themselves and to emote in various ways. And, of course, music is one of the best.
Absolutely.
And then the precursors to the writers that I talk with so often on this program were the people who drew on the cave walls.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Man,
well, quite often there's a collaboration between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And the flute solo that I'd like to play for you is called Syrinx by Claude Debussy. So it has roots in Greek mythology. And this was originally written as incidental music to the uncompleted play Psyche by Gabrielle Mouret. This piece was written in 1913, and it was intended to be performed off stage. It was dedicated to the French flutist Louis Fleury. The story behind it is interesting, especially fitting given what we were just speaking about, because we flutists know this piece as one that tells the story of how the first flute was born in terms of Greek mythology. And in mythology, Syrinx was a beautiful nymph. She was being pursued by Pan, who I think in mythology we know of as the half-goat, half-man creature, so she found him to be quite hideous, and she was not interested. Interestingly enough, they were in the woods, so the pursuit was happening out in nature. So the music tells of this pursuit. Pan is chasing her through the woods, and Syrinx gets down to a river, and she doesn't know how to swim, and so she feels trapped and doesn't know what to do, and she prays to the gods, the Greek gods, to help her. So they turn her into water reeds down by the river.
Oh.
And when Pan gets to the river, he's heartbroken, and he's very angry initially, and he slashes the water reeds. Mm. And then he blows through one of them, and this beautiful music comes out. So that's the story of the first flute.
What a wonderful story. I can't wait to hear the music.
Okay, so this is Syrinx by Claude Debussy.
That was beautiful, Francesca.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, Francesca, you teach.
Yes, I do.
And do you have a website where people might contact you?
I do have a website. My website is www.flutopia.com.
Oh, that's good.
Flutopia. Flutopia, yes. We try to create that atmosphere of utopia.
Uh-huh. Now, do you teach privately at your home or...
I teach in a couple different locations. I have a studio in my home. I teach one day a week in Folsom, and I teach at Tim's Music Store down in Sacramento on Marconi and Watt.
Oh, okay.
I have quite a few students from that location. I teach all ages and all levels.
Hmm.
I've always enjoyed working with students no matter where they are in their musical progression. I just enjoy trying to help them progress from wherever they are when they start with me.
That's wonderful. How long does it take an average student to develop in, you have to learn breath control, and you have to learn to form your lips properly to make a sound on the flute. I know, because I used to try it when I was a kid.
Yes.
I had a friend who had a flute, and I could not make a sound except squeaks.
The formation of the lips is certainly, we start there in
uh-huh.
the very first lesson. And building breath support, we start in the very beginning
uh-huh.
With the proper ways to breathe. The most important thing that I tell my students is that they need to be blowing the air at a target.
Oh.
They need to be directing the air. And typically when students have trouble making a proper sound on the flute, it's because they're just blowing. They're not shaping the airstream
oh.
into a proper shape, and they're not directing the air anywhere.
I see.
So I talk a lot about target practice. I just recently bought a book at the flute convention where I was a week ago in Las Vegas.
Oh.
And this book is written just for band directors who typically don't play the flute specifically, and it's written to help them help their students become better flutists.
Hmm.
And the number one rule, they have 10 rules of flute playing. Rule number one is make sure your air has a target. And then he says band directors make good targets.
Oh, that's good. So say a 9-year-old student who is playing the flute for the first time, how long will it take them to make a sound that they're happy with, and how long will it take for them to learn to play the first few notes?
Making a sound and playing the first few notes, it does vary student to student,
mm-hmm.
but it might happen after one lesson,
oh.
and they're playing simple tunes like Hot Cross Buns. It's just three fingerings.
Yeah, give us a sample.
They can usually play Hot Cross Buns within the first 2 to 3 weeks.
I see.
The breath support takes longer. They're usually playing this way. Breathing between every note because the breath runs out right away. So breath support takes a good 3 to 6 months before they can play 8 beats worth of notes, you know, not having to stop and breathe all the time.
This is good discipline. Teaches really good discipline,
yes,
doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Well, that's a lot of fun. We'll be right back with more from Daniel and Francesca. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and today we're having a musical program, lots of fun, with Daniel Roost and Francesca Anderson. Daniel, you also teach.
I do.
And do you have a wide range of ages in your students as well?
I do, and we happen to be sitting in my studio. Thanks for coming down. I really appreciate you making the trip and making it easy for Francesca and I. So my age range is from like 5 to 70s.
Wow. Are any of those people in their 70s, are they beginning guitarists?
Yeah, and I find that people of that age like to get a little information and then take it home and dwell on it.
And work with it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. And, yeah, your studio is really nice. We're surrounded here by guitar books and photographs and what's that little guitar over there on the wall? Is that a real instrument?
Yeah, funny you should ask. I won that in a raffle. It's a model of a bass guitar.
Oh.
And if the listener can just imagine something that's about maybe not quite 2 feet big and it's a model of a bass guitar, it came in its own little gig bag.
Oh, how cute.
So you know how men used to walk around with these fanny packs?
Yeah.
Now that gig bag is my man purse. I put my wallet and my glasses and such in it.
That's funny. Now, you belong to the Guitar Society.
I do.
And what is it?
The Guitar Society is the Sacramento Guitar Society. It's based in Sacramento in this region. It really covers quite a wide area. In fact, I and my family moved here in 2001, and I'm just surprised at how big this whole area is. But the Sacramento Guitar Society covers the region, and what it does is serve the needs of primarily classical guitarists.
Uh-huh.
And teachers. We list all the teachers in the area. We have a presenting program in more than one venue. We have an outstanding international series at three stages at Folsom Lake College, if you're familiar with the new facility there. That if listeners have probably heard of the Mondavi Center at UC Davis.
Sure.
In Folsom,
mm-hmm.
Just for the last year, they've had this great theater complex that has three stages, one in 850, then a 200, and then a 100-seat. And we present in this 100-seat room that's like a laboratory. It's just so good for the unamplified guitar. You can hear everything. You can hear a pin drop. And we bring, as I said, international artists. And this coming year, we have a great lineup. We have from Russia, Grisha Gorychev. We have from Switzerland, Paul Galbraith. And we have from France, Thibaut Covin. And from China, we have the Beijing Guitar Duo.
Hmm.
And from Sweden, we have Johannes Möller. And these are all wonderful artists. And for those listeners not familiar with those names, and I doubt that many are, they can simply go to the Sacramento Guitar Society website, which is www.sacramentoguitarsociety.org.
Sacramento Guitar Society, what did you say after that?
.org.
Oh, .org. I thought you said something else, too.
.org.
.org. Okay, yeah, that's wonderful. I have heard of Three Stages. I didn't quite know where it was. It's very new, right?
Yeah, on your way in from Bidwell,
uh-huh.
As you came off 50,
yeah.
You would have seen it on the right. That's Folsom Lake College.
I'll look for it on the way back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So would you like to play something for us?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I'll take the opportunity to rehearse for something that I'm playing this coming weekend. I think your audience will make a good practice audience for this next concert I'm doing Saturday, which is a big deal for me. It's every year I go to the Bay Area, and near San Jose there's Mount Hamilton.
Oh, yes.
And when you go to the top of Mount Hamilton, there's an observatory.
Yeah.
It's called Lick Observatory.
Yeah.
And I've been playing there just about every year since 1983. And
they have a concert up there?
They have Music of the Spheres.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
What a beautiful place for it.
It's gorgeous, and it's a great full evening. People, first of all, have to get there, which is quite the journey.
It is quite the drive up that mountain.
Yeah, kind of scary, too.
Narrow roads and windy.
Yeah, very narrow, windy, 360 turns, and finally you're at 4,200 feet, and you can have a sunset picnic and then go in and see the concert.
So the concert is inside
yes,
the building.
Yes.
Aren't the acoustics kind of tricky in there? Is there a lot of echoing?
Well, currently the concert is held in the hallway, which leads to the great 36-inch refractor telescope and that dome. And yes, when the concerts were in the dome, the acoustics were very squirrely, I like to call it. You know, like you could hear someone whisper on the opposite side of the room, and then you move 3 or 4 feet to your left, and you can't. There were spots that were good and spots that were bad. It was a magical room. And at the same time, it was really problematic for concertizing, for not only acoustic reasons, but safety reasons. It's a rising floor, and the whole floor is designed for a couple of astronomers to work.
Mm-hmm.
But we had the audience out on the floor and also on this cat rail around. Now, getting back to the concert, after the concert, there's astronomy. So, as I said, it's a very full evening. After the one-hour concert, half the audience gets a lecture with a world-class astronomer like Alex Filipenko,
wow,
explaining the universe.
Oh, my goodness.
And using slides to show what the Hubble sees and so on. And the other half gets to look through the telescope.
Oh, my goodness.
And outside, there are about six private individuals who have, through a lottery, won the right to have a parking space and set up their gear. And these are very passionate amateurs who have telescopes that may cost in the tens of thousands of dollars.
Mm.
And they say, come here, look. And they point their laser up at the sky and they show you what they're observing, and it could be a planet, a lot of planetary scopes. And anyway, it's a grand evening, and I will open for someone else. This is my routine. So I'll play some classical guitar, and then this year I have Alex DeGrassi, who's a fingerstyle guitar icon.
Hmm.
He started Windham Hill Records, or he started with Windham Hill Records 30 years ago, and and then so it's a great night, and then everybody has to go home, so they have to go down the hill, and it
getting
takes just as long to get down as it did coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what a wonderful evening. Now this must take place every August. Concert evening.
Right. Yeah, generally late August, yeah. Well, there are other concerts, and I'm pleased to say that mine, being the last of the group, actually sold out first.
Oh.
I think that has to do with the appeal of the format, which we call Great Guitars! ! And my guest artists.
And I've heard you play, and I think that you might have something to do with the fact that it's sold out.
I do enjoy my role, I'll tell you that. So I'll play you something.
Okay.
And I'll play you something from, I'll just play you one short thing from my set. It'll be the piece I open with. And it's called Study for Margot, by the composer from Alabama named David Walbert. And David was a teacher of Richard Gilowitz, who was one of my previous guest artists.
Hmm.
So this is Study for Margot.
Okay.
Next, we're going to perform a piece called Sicilienne by the French composer Gabriel Fauré. This was composed in 1898. It was originally intended as incidental music for a play, another play. Fauré was a French composer, pianist, and teacher who was working at the end of the Romantic period. He studied with the very well-known pianist and composer Saint-Saëns. Fauré later became the director of the Paris Conservatory, the music department. And his music is quite beautiful, as you will hear.
Okay. ¶¶
would like to play something called Ole de la Cura, which is a Spanish Baroque era dance. And so fun piece. It's bouncy, and it's a wonderful interplay between the guitar and the flute. So this is Ole de la Cura.
Wonderful.
Thank you. That was fun.
I want you to keep going because I'm enjoying this so much and you're giving me a lot of time off here. I'm having my own concert. So would you like to do another one? By the way, this is Manzanita Voices you're listening to. And my guests today are Daniel Roost and Francesca Anderson. And I'm so happy to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having us.
Oh, it's really nice.
We're delighted to be here, too. You were asking earlier about what we do for during the week, and besides the Guitar Society that I mentioned earlier, I teach. So 5 days a week, and starting later today, I'll have students coming through here, and those interested in taking lessons can reach danielguitar.com.
Okay, danielguitar.com.
Pretty easy to remember.
That's right. And Francesca, yours again is?
Flutopia.com.
Flutopia, okay. Well, I'm going to get out of here. I want you to play some more.
It's been a great pleasure. Thanks, Linda.
Last, we're going to play for you a piece called Entr'acte by the French composer Jacques Ibert. Jacques Ibert was also very active at the Paris Conservatory, where he was a student. This piece was composed in 1935. The French were always fascinated with Spanish classical music, so you will hear the Spanish influence in this music.
Listening to Manzanita Voices, a production of the Manzanita Writers Press, an affiliate of the Calaveras County Arts Council.